This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. When you hear the word art, what comes to mind? A painting or a sculpture? Maybe a country landscape or marble nude. But I'm going to take a wild guess that you don't think of slime molds, plastic surgery, or brain scans as artistic. But maybe that's because our definition of art is outdated. We still believe in two cultures, art and science, and not much meeting of the minds. Well, maybe it's time to revise and revisit that thinking. That's the argument my next guest makes in his new book, Colliding Worlds, How Cutting-Edge Science is Redefining Contemporary Art. Arthur I. Miller is a professor emeritus of history and philosophy of science at University College London. He joins us here in our New York studio. Welcome. Science.
Thank you very much, Ira.
You say there's a new art movement in town. You've given it the name Art Sci.
Yes, Art Sci is a cutting-edge 21st century art movement in which art, science, and technology are coming together. They're merging. And in fact, in various areas of Art Sci, they have merged already. Art Sci produces works that radically differ from anything that has gone before, and so has every right to call itself the new avant-garde.
Mm-hmm. We like on our show to call it Sci Art, but you've turned it around to Art Sci. Usually here, maybe because I'm in this business, Sci Art. Was that done on purpose?
Yes, it was done on purpose because there was a movement called Sci Art in 1999, which was started by the Wellcome Trust. It featured collaborations between medical technologists and artists. And what I wanted to do was to speak about a wider collaboration, a wider coming together of artists with all of the sciences and all of the technologies.
Do you still think there is that wide divide between the two cultures?
That wide divide is getting smaller and smaller. It still exists in some areas. There are still people who believe that art is art and science is science, and those people you don't even want to talk to, really. Because in the 21st century, this debate goes along the lines, or this discussion, I should say, goes along the lines of that there is a association between art and science. Where do we take it from there? My view is a bit more radical than others in that I believe that art, science, and technology as we know them today will disappear, fused into a third culture in which what I've called art sci will become known simply as art, leaving the door open for the next and as yet unimaginable avant-garde. I have come across artists and scientists who not only collaborate with one another, but also people who are artists and scientists rolled up into one.
Did they start out as one or the other, or did they always have?
Well, the way the education system has been going up to now is that they started out as one or the other. However, what one has now is young people who are totally at ease with coding since they've been 10 years old and with electronics, and then they come to art school, and then they don't want to do what the art side denizens somewhat derisively call flat art. They want to continue with electronics and coding. And at least in England, this has impinged greatly on fine art programs and that some of them are closing up.
Do you see, or do these students see coding as an art? Does that make it attractive?
Yes, they see coding as an art. There was a very interesting art exhibition in, I believe it was 2003, called Codec. And in it, about five or six eminent computer artists were asked to do the following task: to take three points in a plane and move those points around to form an image using code. And what was on display was the code and the image so that either one of them could be appreciated. And these people were so well known that you can, without their name being on the code, you can tell who it was.
Yeah, because I remember from going way back to when I was in high school and I had a math teacher, was that he described, you know, mathematical proofs as elegant. It's the first time I ever heard math using an art phrase. It's really elegant. When I look at some of the mathematicians and some of the scientists that we talk to, when you talk to them, they do see the elegance in what they're doing.
And yes, so we should remember that just as there has always been aesthetics in art, and aesthetics in art is totally subjective, it's in the eye of the beholder, there has always been aesthetics in science. Scientists have objective definitions of what, for example, what a beautiful equation is. An equation is beautiful if when you take certain elements in it, you switch them around and the equation comes out to have the same form, such as if you shift left and right in an equation and that equation mm-hmm. maintains its form. That's called mirror symmetry.
Yeah. Let's talk about the art itself. Artists like Picasso and Dali were influenced by science earlier you had Leonardo da Vinci. So what's new about what you're working on, ArtSci?
Well, what's new in that in the first half of the 20th century, artists like Picasso and Dali and Braque were influenced by the ideas of science, but they didn't use the media of science. Whereas in the second half of the 20th century, artists used both the ideas and the media of all the sciences and technology. Because right off the bat, they realized that these media gave them the opportunity to explore age-old themes of emotions and nature using ways that went beyond paint and chisel. And so what emerged in the latter part of the 20th century were fields such as media art, which takes into account animations, robotic art, electronic art, data visualization art emerged, in which artists use algorithms to mine huge caches of data to represent them aesthetically, and sound art emerged as well, in which artists sculpt space with sound.
Mm-hmm. You say ArtSci began right here in Manhattan at 4th Avenue and East 10th Street.
That's right.
How did that happen?
That was Montmartre come to New York City. It was the haunt of Robert Rauschenberg, Robert Motherwell, Andy Warhol, John Cage, Jean Tanguay. This is in the early 1960s. A lot of electronics had become available. Artists wanted to use it, and the critical mass was formed when Billy Kluver appeared on the scene. Kluver's day job was a scientist at Bell Labs in Murray Hill, New Jersey, the American Telephone and Telegraph Company's highly innovative research establishment. And in 1966, he decided it was time for a large-scale collaboration. And so he joined up 30 scientists from Bell Labs, brought them down to the East Village, and hooked them up with 10 artists. And the upshot was 9 evenings, theater and technology, which was an enormous success.
Talking about data visualization in your book, you include a work of data visualization, a really good example called Flight Patterns. Can you tell us about that?
Flight Patterns is the work of Aaron Koblin, who's the creative director of the creative arts team at Google. And what he did was to represent the data of 250,000 flights across the United States on 12 August 2008. And it's a continually emerging installation. Patterns emerge. For example, a pattern of the continental United States. One even sees dark spots. Are they no-fly zones? Well, could they be, grist for the mill of conspiracy theorists? And Koblin told me adamantly, I make art with data.
Mm-hmm. Some of the most out there art in your book is the biology-influenced art. Tell us about Alba the White Rabbit.
Well, biology-influenced art is a very exciting line of research, which focuses on the radical changes bodies will undergo in the 21st century, that is to say, what it means to be a body in the 21st century. Eduardo Katz is the artist who did an installation on a live rabbit named Alba the Bunny. And Alba the Bunny underwent gene therapy with the injection of a green protein fluorescent gene from a jellyfish, which when blue light is shown on it, glows green, just as Alba did. And the Katz's goal was to provoke debates about the ethics of gene therapy, the ethics of genetically engineering living organisms to produce organisms that did not previously exist.
Did it hurt the bunny at all?
No, not at all.
It just glowed.
The bunny lived out its life normally.
And he took the bunny on tour?
No, he wasn't allowed to take the bunny. The scientists in the lab would not allow Katz to take the bunny out of the lab. And so Katz started a whole to-do about free Alba.
You have an artist in here with what looks like a third ear implanted on his arm. How do you do that, and why?
Well, that's Stelarc. Stelarc is one of the most famous artists in my book. He's a performance artist, and he focuses on body enhancement. And what he did was it's not really an ear like on your head. It's Stelarc stem cells woven into a biodegradable polymer frame, which is embedded in his arm and then continues to grow in the shape of an ear. And nearby, there's a hole drilled in his arm in which will be placed a Bluetooth device to connect Stelarc to the web. And the idea is, what will bodies be like in the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd century? We will have more and more chips implanted in us, and probably in the end, we'll sort of be like RoboCop.
Could this overtake tattooing and piercing as the next thing to do with your body?
Oh, absolutely.
The next artistic expression, you'll have an ear here, a nose there. Who knows how many ears on your arm or a leg. Let's talk about another artist who makes designer butterflies. How does she do that, designer butterflies?
What she does is she takes a hot needle and probes in the cocoons so that the butterflies are altered. Just one butterfly is altered, not the genes. And that's the idea. It's almost disturbing to see butterflies with asymmetrical patterns on their wings.
So she's not modifying the genetics?
She's not not the genetics.
But she's just injecting something to make
She just probes them with a hot needle and disturbs the development of that particular butterfly.
Hmm. How has your art side been received by the art world? Are they enthusiastic?
It goes all over the place. Some are not very enthusiastic. Some people in the they're not very enthusiastic. What I'm presenting is a very radical thesis that art, science, and technology will merge into one. Cutting edge art, science, and technology will merge into one. What people are worried about is, will painting go away? Well, no, it can always be there. There will always be painters. But I think the center of gravity will change more towards this new art side movement. And this will require a lot of changes in the educational system. Universities are made up of departments. You're hired into a department, and you're paid through it, and you be promoted through it. And what will have to happen is unification of departments. Now, the unification of the sciences is already occurring. You have biotechnology, you have examples of engineering science departments that would have been considered to be an oxymoron not too long ago.
Talking with Arthur I. Miller, a professor emeritus of history and philosophy of science at University College in London, author of the new book, Colliding Worlds, How Cutting-Edge Science is Redefining Contemporary Art. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. So when you have all these artists and scientists collaborating, whose name gets on the artwork?
Art science collaboration. Yeah, that's an important point. One has an issue now with artists and scientists collaborating as to sharing credit. Too many artists believe that scientists give them a gift of knowledge, which they can use at their discretion, but they forget that no science, no art. I was caught in that dilemma when I did a collaboration with an artist, and we had several successful exhibitions. They were small ones. Then on the big one, I suddenly saw works on the wall hanging from the ceiling. My name was nowhere. It was just at the very beginning of the exhibition. And nowadays, artists and scientists in collaborations are urged to sign an agreement that both names appear. But not so fast. Gallery owners don't like the idea of two names appearing on a work of art. Makes them all that less sellable. And this goes even deeper in that most curators and gallery owners today know almost no science and technology, so they shy away from products of science and technology. And so works of art sci have to be exhibited only in certain places, in certain buildings, very interesting.
The lobby of IBM or something like that.
Well, no. Places like Le Laboratoire Cambridge, which just opened an art sci gallery, and also laboratory. And there are several of these around the world. In fact, one is reminded here of the situation in 19th century Paris when groups of artists, amongst them Renoir, Manet, Monet, Toulouse-Lautrec, Pizarro, and Seurat, were refused to be exhibited in the establishment art galleries. And so they opened up their own art galleries. Amongst them, one was named Salon de Refusé, Salon of the Refused. And these art institutions that I mentioned to you are the modern-day salons of the refused.
One of the questions that ArtSci tries to answer is, can a computer be creative? And you have brought two pieces of music today that will illustrate that. Tell us what we're going to hear.
Well, you're going to hear a piece written by Johann Sebastian Bach and a piece of music generated by an algorithm written by David Cope, a computer scientist and artist in California.
Okay, let's hear piece number one. Okay. Now we're going to hear piece number two, and the challenge is to guess which one is the real Bach. Okay, you stumped me. I have 50-50 chance to guess on this one. I'll guess the first one.
Yes, you're right.
I was right.
When I present this at lectures, generally there is a split. And what comes to mind here is that since this seems to be difficult to make a definite decision, might there be something in the algorithm that taps into the creativity of Bach? Mm-hmm. When the melodies that emerge from Bach's pure lines of composition, people find amazing. And those who have played Bach on a piano, when you put your hands down, you play a chord, what emerges sometimes stops you dead, stops me dead anyway. How did he do it? Did Bach touch the cosmos? As Einstein said of Mozart, it seems as if he plucked his melodies out of the air. And globally, what I'm getting at here is that I believe that the line of research of cognitive scientists using algorithms to explore creativity is at this time more fertile than the line pursued by neuroscientists who slam people into fMRI scanners, watch what parts of their brain light up, and then make sweeping conclusions with almost no statistics.
Arthur I. Miller is the author of Colliding Worlds, How Cutting-Edge Science is Redefining Contemporary Art. He's also Professor Emeritus of History and Philosophy of Science at University College in London. A wonderful read. Thank you, Arthur, for coming and talking with us.
Thank you very much, Ira, for inviting me.